Super Talk Mississippi Media Production. You're listening to Thunder and Lightning on Super Talk Mississippi, covering Mississippi State sports like nobody else. With Sports Talk Mississippi's Brian Haydad and Robbie Falk of On3 Sports. Now get ready for Thunder and Lightning.
This is Thunder and Lightning here on Super Talk Mississippi. Brian Haydad and Robbie Falk here with you on a Thursday morning. Thanks for joining us here at supertalk.fm or wherever it is that you get podcasts from. We appreciate all you guys out there, our great listeners, especially our servicemen and women out there taking care of us. I want to thank our sponsors over at Strange Brew Coffeehouse and Churn and Spoon Ice Cream. Start your day the right way. The trip to the drive-thru over at Strange Brew Coffeehouse here in Starkville or at Brupolo over in Tupelo. Be a little weird, Robbie, if Brupolo was in Friendship.
It would be a little weird.
Friendship.
You can find a lot of friendship at Strange Brew Coffeehouse, though.
You certainly can, and I would encourage you to do so. So, next time you're in Starkville or Tupelo, make sure you head over to Strange Brew Coffeehouse. But if you're not going to be there anytime soon, well, it's just a click away at strangebrewcoffeehouse.com. All you got to do is go to the website, and they will ship it to you, and you can enjoy it each and every morning. strangebrewcoffeehouse.com. Pip Printing and Signs, reliable service for every business need. That's what they wrote down here for me to say. What that really means is this. If you need to get people in the front door of your business, Pip Printing and Signs can help you do that. 30 years of experience, Mississippi State owned and operated. If you're a business owner and you're a Mississippi State fan, how do you turn this deal down? Do your printing with Pip Printing and Signs. 10% of your sale goes right back to the Bulldog Initiative in your name. So Pip Printing and Signs is already a Bulldog Initiative business. You will be too, just by using the money you're already spending on printing. That is a great deal that you cannot pass up, and you get the benefit of doing business with Pip Printing and Signs. So check them out. Call Camden Baker today, 601-499-5216. He'll get you taken care of. Tell him you heard about it on Thunder and Lightning. When you need printing, call Pip today. College Corner, collegecornerstore.com. That's the place to find the maroon and white merchandise that you're looking for. The biggest and best selection in Central Mississippi. They've got everything you need for a Super Bulldog weekend trip to Starkville. So if you're looking for some new gear, and I know that you are, then you need to head over to College Corner. Two locations in the Jackson area, Ridgeland by Fleet Feet, Flowood by the Half Shell, or you can shop online, collegecornerstore.com. Restaurant Tyler is Starkville's flagship restaurant. It is the place to grab the best lunch, the best dinner, the best Sunday brunch in town. If you're going to be in Starkville this Super Bulldog weekend, you've got to make a trip to Restaurant Tyler. It won't be complete without it. If you got to stand in line for Sunday brunch, it's totally worth it. If you can make a reservation for dinner, I would suggest doing so. Great Southern cooking for lunch. Great. It's still Southern cooking, but it's gussied up a little bit at dinner. And then their Sunday brunch is the best in town. It's all right there at one location. It's all at Restaurant Tyler. Priority One Bank, 16 locations to serve you throughout Central Mississippi. If you are a person who likes to talk to people on the phone and not talk to a automated computer operator, and especially when you're talking about your money, I would suggest you need to talk to the good folks at Priority One Bank. They understand how to treat people. They know how to give you that community bank feel, but they also offer all of the great financial services that you need to keep your finances moving these days. So if you haven't already, give the website a look, PriorityOneBank.com. You can learn a lot more about them and find the location nearest you. Let Priority One Bank make you their priority. It's a football kind of day here on Thunder and Lightning. Plenty of football to talk about. Another SEC preview coming your way. Joe Cook will join us from inside Texas. Long talk about the Longhorns, who I think are one of the favorites in the SEC here in year one for them. But we will start here with in positional breakdown land yet again. Our last one, though, Robbie, we did it. We timed it right. How do we pull that off?
I don't know.
Normally we are like
you're the one you're the one that plans all this stuff out. So
trying to give you some credit, but you didn't want to take it. I just tried to help you.
I'm not going to take credit that's not mine.
I was trying to get.
We will take credit on the. We'll take credit on the state script. Take credit on, you know, even changes with the atmosphere at Duty Noble or Davis Wade Stadium. But this, I cannot take credit on.
All right, then that's fine. So in the secondary for Mississippi State, a lot of new faces, you know, and that's the overriding theme of this defense is a lot of new faces. really, you know, a couple of guys that you're going to know. Hunter Washington, Corey Ellington, Bryce Pollock got some playing time towards the end of the season last year. But none of these guys, when you say, are they a difference maker? Are they, you know, a preseason all-SEC kind of guy? I don't see that with any of them. And then you have some new faces back there. You know, maybe not new. Isaac Smith got some playing time a season ago. But a guy like Brylan Lanier, a guy like Tyler Woodard, these are, you know, JUCO guys from EMCC. A guy like Kamari Rogers, who, you know, transferred in from Miami and then didn't do much. He was injured a good part of last year. This is the one spot. If you told me to fill out a starting lineup, I don't think I could do one in the secondary. I don't know. I don't feel like I would be confident in telling you that any of these guys are going to start outside of maybe Ellington and Pollock. And even then, those are not set in stone. You know, how do you feel about the secondary as we sit here on April 17th, 3 days away from the spring game?
I mean, I've heard good things so far in the spring, but you always have to kind of be wary of that. You don't really know if it's the offense is struggling or if the defense truly is kind of coming out of its shell a little bit. But there's definitely some guys that I could see that bloom this year. Guys that have the potential that haven't really proven it yet, that really come out and play some good football. You know, Jacoby Albert is a guy that hadn't really taken part in much of spring, but he was a guy that they were really high on when he came in out of Kentucky. They felt like he was going to help him last year, and then he got hurt. I think that's the guy that can factor into it once they get into fall. We haven't seen him yet, so that's a situation you're going to have to wait till the fall to see him. But I've heard some good things about Brylan Lanier at this point. I think he's going to be a player that can be a playmaker for you back there, a guy that's kind of a ball hawk, hard-hitting, Jonathan Abram type guy that's going to be all over the field. I think that you could see him really kind of emerge this year. I mean, that's a guy that was at Alabama that played for Coleman Hutzler. I mean, Coleman Hutzler knows who he is, and that's a player that he's seen up close and personal and had a good year JUCO last year. So, you know, it wouldn't shock me to see him really come out and play some good football. I don't know what's going to happen at cornerback.
Mm-hmm.
That's safety really is not a huge concern for me because I think I could definitely see some players showing up back there and making plays for you. Like, it's not going to shock you if Corey Ellington has a good year because he was solid last year. It's not going to shock you if Tyler Woodard comes out and makes a name for himself this year after what he did at EMCC, and that's a guy that you've now recruited twice. You know, it's not going to shock you if Isaac Smith has a big season as a sophomore. Cornerback is where I'm really concerned because there's absolutely – well, I won't say no experience because Bryce Pollock got some last year, but it's pretty much no experience at cornerback.
Right.
You're counting on possibly Kelly Jones as a redshirt freshman, Kamari Rogers, who hasn't played a lot of football. You just don't know, and you've had some guys transfer out there. You really need to go out there and get a cornerback out of the portal that can come in and play right away. But, you know, one guy that I've heard some good things about is Trey Wright from Memphis.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a player, when he signed here, people were not pumped about that.
Yeah.
Redshirted at Memphis. You're picking up a redshirt guy at Memphis. It didn't look good from an optic standpoint, but he's had a really good spring so far. It would be nice to see him step up and take over one of those cornerback roles, maybe with Bryce Pollock, who I thought did some good things last year. So we'll see.
Yeah, the cornerback position. And you think about the last basically 6-7 years for Mississippi State, where you went from Cam Dantzler to Martin Emerson to Emmanuel Forbes to DeCameron Richardson. You had at least at all times one guy back there that you could rely on, that you felt that you knew something about. And you just don't have that this year. The guy Kelly Jones is incredibly interesting to me, because you don't see cornerbacks built like him anymore. I mean, a lot of times the guy, he's 6'4". A lot of times a guy like that will put on 25 pounds, and he might even be a linebacker. at that point, but definitely more of a safety type. Or honestly, guys like that usually end up on offense and they become wide receivers. He is a guy that if he can tap into that kind of potential, could be a not only a good player for Mississippi State, but an actual difference maker. But that's the key is can he do that? You just don't see a lot of 6'4" cornerbacks out there. It's usually 5'10", 5'11". He's very intriguing to me, as is Kamari Rogers, who, you know, I feel like if Kamari Rogers had done what we all thought he was going to do 3 years ago, I guess it was 3 years ago, and signed with Mississippi State, and just been a Mississippi State Bulldog right out of high school, he probably would be in the starting lineup right now. But going to Miami and then having a year here to catch, I think that stunted his development. So I think State has got some high ceiling guys, but I feel like these guys are also kind of low floor. I feel like there's a lot of risk reward, or however you want, whatever cliche you want to use here, where you could look if you don't go into the transfer portal and find somebody. And you know, quite honestly, I mean, they didn't have a lot of success in the December window. Maybe they have more success now because the season is closer and people realize their options are fewer. It's possible. I mean, it's kind of a sort of, you know, who you got to pick up, who you got to pick up at last call. If you want to play, you got to get on a team. But there's also a possibility that we look at this team all year long and we're thinking, man, they just can't cover anybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to have to be, I think, an opportunistic defense, a defense that's hunting the ball, that's trying to get the ball out, force turnovers. I think that's probably your best chance here to be good this year. Like, maybe you give up some plays, but that old bend but don't break defense, that defense that is going to strip the ball out. You know, Mississippi State has had defenses like that maybe the numbers weren't great, but they would come up with a big play, and they would go out there and make some plays for you. You mentioned Kelly Jones. I don't really know who to compare him to. Because I think maybe the closest guy from a – and I'm just stating from a strictly a body standpoint would be maybe Jonathan Banks. Mm-hmm. And Jonathan Banks
6'2".
Played some safety at Mississippi State, and then moved him to cornerback. And Kelly's built even a little more different than him. He's a little more broad-shouldered, can put on some weight, I think. Jonathan was kind of a skinny guy, and Jonathan was also 2 inches shorter. So he's even – you know, Jonathan was kind of a guy that you might even say he looks like a safety. But this guy's 2 inches taller, and he's closing in on 200 pounds. It's going to be really intriguing to see him go because I think he's got the athleticism. I think he's proven that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he has the ability to cover out there. It's just it's going to be very interesting to see him there because, like you said, you just don't see many cornerbacks that tall and have that kind of stature.
The other player I want to talk about in this is Isaac Smith. That's a guy, you know, we remember last year when he signed with Mississippi State, we thought this was a guy who – maybe by the end of his freshman year was going to be a regular contributor and maybe even a starter. It didn't quite turn out that way for him. And, you know, when you have that high recruiting profile, some people want to label you right away as, hey, if he's not playing early, that's a problem. I don't think that's an issue for Smith. I think it goes back to what we said yesterday or 2 days ago with this former staff's just reluctance to rotate guys and to get guys playing time. Isaac Smith, to me, is a potential breakout player for Mississippi State. I know the talent is there with him. It's just, does he get the reps to do it? Could you see him by becoming not only a good player for Mississippi State, but a star for Mississippi State?
Yeah, for sure. If you go back to last spring, he had shoulder surgery and had to sit out for the whole spring. Had he played in the spring, there's no telling where he would be. And even Zach Arnett admitted that. You know, that spring definitely set him back, and he still was able to come out and make some plays for you down the stretch. And I thought, you know, there was one game where, you know, he was on a highlight reel, but late in the year, he started playing a lot more for State. And I just have to wonder, had he been able to play in the spring and gotten those big reps in the spring, what would he have looked like last year? Played in every game last season. Mostly on special teams, I think. But like I said, as the season went on, he ended up late in the year, I think maybe starting a game or two or playing some significant reps when they had some injuries. So he was starting to get it there late. I think that this year could be a big season for him. We know the potential that he has. Great kid, great locker room guy, hard worker, great athlete. So to me, this is a chance for him this year to kind of step in when everything's so wide open for State in the secondary. This is a chance for him to step in. He's now had a full year of being healthy after the shoulder surgery. He should be ready to roll this year.
The secondary, I feel like this is where Mississippi State will make or break its defense. I have faith in David Turner to put together this defensive line and get those guys going in the right direction. With Blanton, you at least have a guy to build around there at the linebacker position. If the secondary can find a way through here, then you've got something defensively. Because if you can cover, that goes a long way. But if they can't, then I feel like this defense is the difference between looking like what Ole Miss looked like in 20, not in 21, because they won 10 games. I'm not saying State's going to win 10 games, but maybe what they look like in 22 when they went 8-5, or what they look like in 20 when they couldn't stop anybody, but they could score every play. And so I'm fascinated by this. This is the most, to me, if somebody asked me, what position will best determine what Mississippi State is this year? It's this one. Because I believe offensively they're going to be just fine, and I believe those other two spots are going to be fine on the defense. This is the one that I have the most questions about.
It's just hard to believe that Mississippi State's got a culture of good to great defenses. And we've talked about it before. 2016 was kind of the anomaly for them. It was you just hope that you don't have that situation this year. But other than that, there's been times where we've looked up and said, I just don't know about this defense. I don't know if they're going to be able to get it done. And they played above their heads. And I thought they did that last year. I thought they got better and better as the year went on with Matt Brock.
Yeah.
This year, I think this defense, like I said, has got to be one that's probably going to have to force teams into turnovers, force teams into mistakes. They're going to give up some big plays. They're going to give up some yards. But they've just got to be able to survive, hold teams down, try to keep them to field goals, things like that. If they do that, I think they can have a good season. But that's kind of where they are right now, and then you just have to kind of reassess and go out there and recruit and build that defense up to what the standards are at Mississippi State. But it's just been a place where defense has not been a huge issue, and that dates back to a long time ago. So we'll see if they're able to do that this year, despite the fact they have a lot of new faces out there and a lot of inexperience.
We shall see. We shall see what happens with this group, because they are going to be a huge and we won't have any answers anytime soon. The next couple of weeks in the portal will be really big for Mississippi State here, because I agree with you. They've got to at least try to get one guy in here that's more of a proven commodity at cornerback. We'll see if that's actually able to happen. All right, let's move into the rest of the show that's brought to you by our good friends over at the Mississippi Beef Council, who want to remind you that beef, it is what's for dinner. If you're a person like me, you get home, you got to cook dinner. Beef is such a great option because it cooks so quickly. It's good for you, and it's delicious. That's the trifecta of the weeknight dinner. So if you can get your hands on some beef, I suggest that's the way to make your family really happy each and every night of the week. If you're looking for recipes, they're right there at msbeef.org, along with a lot of great information about the beef industry here in the state of Mississippi. A lot of good stuff going on with them. If you want to check it out at msbeef.org. Beef, it's what's for dinner, thanks to our friends at the Mississippi Beef Council. Two Brothers Smoked Meats in the heart of the Cotton District is the place to find the smoked Southern soul food that you are looking for. And again, I can't stress enough, if you're going to be in Starkville for Super Bulldog weekend, you've got to make a trip to Two Brothers. It's got to be on the list of things to do. Such great food, great place to hang out, easy access to campus. It's just a short walk away from Diddy Noble Field. You can enjoy yourself and enjoy a great time each and every time you are at Two Brothers Smoked Meats. Great products and great service is what every business wants to promise you. They deliver it to you at Advantage Business Systems, and they've been doing it for 49 years. So if you need a new computer for your business, new laptops, printers, copiers, whatever it is, they've got you covered with great name brands, great prices, but more importantly, great service after the sale. When something goes wrong, and it just does, even the best machines are going to break down over time, you can trust Advantage Business Systems to get you taken care of and do it quickly. If you're in Mississippi,
you're in Mississippi.
Simple as that. Give them a call at 601-362-9192, or you can visit them online, absms.com. Find out how Advantage Business Systems will help your business do business. If you're going to be in Starkville this weekend, I know I'm putting a lot on your plate as far as if you're going to be here this weekend, but I'm doing it for your own benefit, and that's to, for you to head over to Maroon & Co. and grab some great gear that you can't get anywhere else. They have one of the widest selections of Mississippi State gear that you're ever going to find, stuff that's just not on the shelf anywhere else. And they've got of course, they are the official and exclusive provider for the Bulldog Initiative. So if you want to wear those hoodies, those pullovers, those shirts that you see the coaches wearing, you can only get them at Maroon & Co. Use the promo code THUNDER15, 15% off all regular priced items. And that does have some exclusions, but for the most part, that's going to get you 15% off. You can do that at Maroon & Co. Before you head to Duty Noble this weekend, make sure you head to Maroon & Co. You comfortable there?
I was just getting my wallet out.
Is your wife there?
What?
I mean, you're getting your wallet out. I assume she, you know.
Oh. No, I was just checking to see what I had in there.
I got you. All right.
Getting kind of low.
I hear you. A little recruiting news. Not the recruiting song worthy kind, but Mississippi State, as you know, did pick up a commitment from Rashard Amos, the top running back in the portal at that time. Then you have Damian Martinez, the running back from Oregon State. Now he is the top running back in the portal, and he is visiting Mississippi State this weekend. Mississippi State, I mean, Jeff Levy said it. He said it out loud. He said, got to get better at that position. It made it pretty clear he was going to go after one back, but now he looks like he's going after a second back. And these are the top two guys in the portal at this position. Obviously, it's very refreshing to see. What do you think State's chances are of getting this kid?
I think that they're good. I think they're right up there with some of these other schools he scheduled visits with. He just canceled his Tennessee visit. It looks like Miami is probably the team to beat. Mm-hmm. But the good news is you're bringing him in on a good weekend here, and you got a chance to really turn the tide. And this is a guy that you mentioned best in the portal. He rushed for 2,000 yards the last two seasons combined at Oregon State.
Mm-hmm.
This is a difference maker for you. This changes the game for you. To have Damian Martinez and Rashard Amos in the same backfield with what you got changes the game. It makes your offense significantly more dangerous than it was and might make up a game or two on your predictions. And so we talked about the other day. We really can't cement what we think Mississippi State is going to be until after this portal haul in the offseason here.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have the possibility of getting, you know, three or four starters on either side of the ball can completely change the outcome of the season.
Yeah, we may be having to redo our positional breakdowns.
Yeah, I mean, so
because we're going to be so many new faces.
We can talk about the defense. We just talked about how inexperienced they were and things like that. If they went out there and got two starting cornerbacks from a Power 5 score, a really good group of five guy, and a safety, maybe an edge rusher, you're starting to talk about, you know, can this team win, you know, 7, 8, 9 games?
Mm-hmm.
That's how quickly you can change your fortunes in the transfer portal. And I really love that Jeff Lebby is looking at the roster, assessing it, and saying, I can get better here. I can go get better players. It's not about, you know, being loyal to somebody or just playing what you got. You have at your disposal now a free agency right in front of you where you can go out and get better players that can come in here and change your season. He's not content with just rebuilding or building his, you know, his own team over time. He wants to win right now, and yeah. I like that.
There is no – you know, it used to be you would hire a new – you'd have a couple of losing seasons. You fire your coach. You bring in the new coach, and the talk would be, well, by the time the guys he recruits are juniors – you should be back up and running, maybe when they're seniors, right? So you're thinking it's a 3-4-year process. Those days are over. And Jeff Lebby knows it. So that's what you're right. He's going out. He's like, he said when we talked to him on Sports Talk Mississippi for the first time back in, I want to say that was in January. that he's like, you know, it's not a rebuild. Well, this is what you're talking about. If you're not going to rebuild, then you better go out and improve the talent on your team. And you have to do it at every position, and you can't have any loyalty holding you back on that. So far, so good on that account for Jeff Lebby. Let's do a spring preview here. We got two left after this. I don't know about Vanderbilt, man. They may just have me and you talking about them because I cannot and I get my hands on anybody. But I was able to get somebody from Texas, from inside Texas. That is part of that On3 network I was telling you guys about for a long time. Joe Cook is his name. Now, there's actually a guy here in Mississippi named Joe Cook as well. He works for WAPT. I remember the first time I texted this guy, we wanted to have him on Sports Talk to talk about Texas. And I was like, hey, Joe, Brian Haydab, I'm Sports Talk Mississippi. Would you mind joining our podcast today? And he was just like, are you sure you reached the right Joe Cook?
He must have been hit up before.
He said he's been hit up so many times. He's like, I don't know anything about Murrah High School, but I can tell you all about Texas. So let's do that now. Joe Cook, inside Texas, his thoughts on the Longhorns. For the first time, we're going to talk about the Texas Longhorns here on Thunder and Lightning. Joe Cook joins me. He has been with Inside Texas for a number of years. They cover the Longhorns for On3 Sports. And Joe, I'm going to ask you to make a couple of cases for me to start things off here. Make the case that in year one, Texas is going to win the SEC.
Ooh, man, that is a tough one to start off with. But let's go ahead and look at the schedule. Their toughest games, at least at this point, are either at a neutral site they're very familiar with or at home. And it's going to be in front of a packed crowd. Only problem is they're back-to-back, and that's Oklahoma at the Cotton Bowl in Dallas, and then at Georgia heading to Austin the same weekend as a Formula One race. You can ignore the non-conference that includes Michigan, I guess, in this. But they get it's not the worst schedule. There's some positives to it. Looking at it right now, I know you have Mississippi State at home. You get Kentucky at home. But you do have to go to Fayetteville, and although there are problems there, they do have a talented quarterback, it looks like, and that's a place that hates Texas. Similar applies to Texas A&M. They are going to be loud and rocking. And then, of course, Florida comes to town. I don't expect anything out of the Gators. So, you know, if talent comes to bear, there are probably two games that will really decide if Texas is a number one or number two team in the SEC. One of those is probably against a team with similar aspirations in Georgia. And I think they have the quarterbacks to do it, to be fair. I think they have the offensive line, receivers, running backs, tight ends. The one area of concern is defensive tackle, and I know that's big in the SEC, but they've shown acumen and, you know, a level of play even throughout this spring to where if it all comes together, the recruiting classes they've built, the talent they have on hand, goes toe-to-toe with anybody. And I'd take Sark as an offensive play caller and, for the most part, Pete Kwiatkowski as a defensive play caller up against pretty much anybody in the SEC to put it all together and maybe make their way to Atlanta and shock some people in year one.
All right, that's a strong case. Let's do it again. Make the case that Quinn Ewers is the best quarterback in college football.
Oh, man, that's a tough one. Hold on. Let me think about how to answer that. I think Quinn Ewers has showed a lot of development over his 2 years, now entering his third year at Texas. And I think that was development that sometimes he never had the chance to receive. He had a great arm. He had the right size for quarterback, and he was incredibly accurate with arm angles back when he was at South Lake Carroll in the DFW area. But he fought a lot through his junior year through injuries. And then before his senior year starts, he goes to Ohio State and rolls literally the week before camp, along with, I think, Fields and Stroud, Jack Miller, a bunch of guys are there already, and he just goes up there. He's getting four string reps. He loses, obviously, the chance to play his senior year of high school for a very well-regarded quarterbacks coach at South Lake Carroll. And so he's getting four string reps. He's not really getting a whole lot. I think COVID was an issue for the Buckeyes at that point, and I think it hit Quinn as well. So then he decides to transfer. And then he's thrust into the starting spot. Well, he's thrust into the starting spot based off talent and potential alone and not off of anything proven. He has a lot of games where you see some flashes, but then he lays a stinker against TCU, is basically unplayable against Baylor, and comes out and has a pretty solid bowl game, and that portends a little bit for the following year. And then you see the chance for him to develop. That development helps Texas get to the college football playoff. It helps the offense win some games based off of his arm, Alabama, TCU, even the Big 12 title game. And so I think you can make the case that finally all that potential that some of these services saw as a sophomore in high school has been fully brought out, fully developed, and he's able to not only hit the short and intermediate throws, he's able to command the offense. He is probably going to have Steve Sarkisian in his ear with a headset based off what the new NCAA football rules allow him to do. And he's going to have a heck of a receiver core to throw to and an offensive line protecting him. I think if he stays healthy, which has been a concern, this is a year it really all comes together for Quinn Ewers, and all that development that he needed in order to get to this point, he's finally gotten to match with his extreme talent that he showed early.
You mentioned that Texas schedule. October 19th, Georgia will come to Texas. That should be, at worst, a top five matchup. It could very easily be one versus two. That is the biggest game at Texas. At Texas, I know that the game with Oklahoma is in Dallas every year. At Texas, that's the biggest game since what?
Probably the Alabama game in 2022 when Bryce Young evaded a sack attempt by a blitzing corner almost miraculously to scamper down the sideline and set up the game-winning field goal. And then before that, it was, you probably have to say, LSU in 2019 when Joe Burrow and that trio of receivers on a third and 17, on a blitz on third and 17, I think he found either Chase or Jefferson over the middle and he scampered for the score. So the two biggest games that since the two biggest games prior have featured SEC teams with Heisman Trophy winning quarterbacks. Georgia is going to be a massive one. It's going to be a wild, wild weekend in Austin. If anybody planned on going and you haven't gotten your hotel yet, good luck. I don't know if there's going to be any for y'all to go check out and check into, but that Georgia game is going to be huge. Luckily, unlike the LSU game the Alabama game in 2022, it should be at night. That was a Fox Sports I guess symptom. This game's going to be on ESPN. It's going to have the number one team, and who knows, maybe it's one versus two. I think that'd be something pretty cool to see. Ohio State's going to have something to say about that, but this is definitely, I think, the game Texas fans have had scheduled or circled on the schedule ever since they learned of the SEC 2024 slate.
Is that famous Arkansas Texas game from 1969? Was that at Texas or at Arkansas?
That was at Arkansas. President Nixon was there, and it was one.
I'm trying to think when the last time Texas would have had one versus two, if that does indeed come to pass. So
you know, I know they've had top five matchups. There's a very famous game with Oklahoma from 2008, where number five Texas upset Sam Bradford and the Sooners, and that was five versus one. I don't think they've played in a one versus two in a long time, maybe since they played Georgia in a Cotton Bowl in the mid-1980s.
Before that, on September the 28th, the first ever SEC game in Austin will be against Mississippi State. If State fans who are coming to that game, I've already told them, like, first off, Austin, great town. You'll have a fantastic time. Is there any plan from Texas that you know of to do anything special or commemorative for that particular game?
You know, I'm not exactly sure at this point yet. That's something that maybe they'll release as they get closer to the game. Now, if you do go to a Texas game on the west side of Darrell K. Royal, Texas Memorial Stadium, they have something called Bevo Boulevard, which is kind of a place to grab beer. There's a midway for kids. There's a place to, you know, there's promos and cheerleaders, stuff that kind of really shows what Texas football is like. And of course, there are also some TVs and big screens there to make sure that you don't miss any of the action. They typically have a concert right outside the stadium. The LBJ Presidential Library is about a 4-iron from the stadium. And there's a big park where they put a stage and have some great musicians. They're going to have for the spring game, Reckless Kelly, kind of a Texas Red Dirt artist who have done a lot of great things. And at some points, I'm trying to think of some other ones they've had, but they've had Ludacris before. Like it's a good place to hang out before the game. It's in the middle of campus, and campus is in the middle of downtown, kind of, sort of. But there are some great places too, like Schultz's, Posse East, heck, even the UT Alumni Center. You can get in some AC for a very small fee and really enjoy what's going on there. So I don't know if they have anything specific planned, but they've definitely leaned into the SEC being a big deal, being something that'll help draw people, and they're going to do their best, I feel like, to welcome anybody who makes their way to Austin for any conference game.
One man's 4-iron is another man's driver. I just want to point that out to you, Joe. You never know.
Man, it's my I got to aim left so it goes right.
Let's talk a little bit about the team. I love the offensive line for Texas. So much experience coming back, and the one guy who isn't, you know, a multi-year starter for the Longhorns, Cameron Williams, is one of the biggest human beings you'll ever see. Just an absolute mauler there at right tackle. Is this going to be the best offensive line in the country?
It's got a good chance. Again, the one in Athens, Georgia may have something to say about that. But, you know, across the board, there has been a little bit of competition at a couple spots. But left tackle, third-year player, Kelvin Banks, future first-rounder. He has started every game since he showed up on campus and has been a phenomenal protector of Quinn Ewers' blind side. I'll skip a spot, but center is fifth-year senior Jake Majors, who's drawn a lot of great reviews. Right guard is third-year player DJ Campbell, former five-star. There's some clips of him in the Alabama game that are truly impressive. And then the guy you mentioned, Cam Williams, has kind of taken that right tackle spot and proven that not only he's just a big human, but he's got some ability to move as well. The left guard spot has been interesting because last year, Hayden Connor, who I believe is going to be a fourth year senior this upcoming season, he started every game there. But there are some times where in the run game, he's not getting the push that I think Texas would like. Guys he's competed with include Neto Umozulu, who Steve Sarkisian kind of praised the other day, and even mentioned a time last year when he was in against some backups where he had to kind of wrangle him in. And also Cole Hudson, who started his true freshman year in 2022 at right guard before Campbell kind of usurped his spot. So four are set. You know, offensive line coaches like probably having seven or eight at their disposal and, you know, three more on top of their starting five. And so it looks like if there are going to be any changes or any competition that really comes up for grabs throughout fall camp, it's going to be at that left guard spot between Umozulu, Connor, and Hudson.
Isaiah Bond makes one of the biggest plays in the history of the University of Alabama, but in today's college football, now he's a Texas Longhorn. Is he the guy who can replace Xavier Worthy? Can he become one of the top wide receivers in the conference and in the country?
Yeah, I mean, you could make an argument that he was last year. And here's the thing, I think a lot of Texas fans are counting on. They're counting on Quinn Ewers being a little bit more efficient than Jalen Milroe. Jalen Milroe is a great deep ball passer. That's what Isaiah Bond was good at, but there were some intricacies that he wasn't great at. There's thoughts that Quinn Ewers can do that and that Bond could then be a number one guy. He's been praised as having some of the best speed on the team, if not the best speed. He's becoming a more complete receiver, and there's high hopes for him. If he's likely to take over that role, yeah, it would be Xavier Worthy's. But this wide receiver core is going to look a little bit different than one last year. So think about it. You had Worthy with that 4.21 speed, probably about 5'11", 165. You had Adonai Mitchell, 6'3", 210, running a 4.3 at that boundary spot for the most part. And then you had Jordan Whittington, who's probably going to be an undrafted free agent and blocked like a fullback, was a reliable chain mover in the slot. The physical profile of the guys look a little bit different this year. You have Isaiah Bond, kind of the 6'1", you know, maybe 6'2", lean but not skinny, but a speedster. Matthew Golden is a little similar. He's a transfer from University of Houston who actually had two touchdown receptions against the Longhorns last year. And then Jonte Cook, who's a returning sophomore player, five-star in the 2023 class, who was the fourth receiver last year, but with those top three, basically had to wait his turn. Those guys have similar physical profiles, so you may see them move all over the field. All of them have some deep shot opportunities, but I think if you're looking for a wide receiver one, it's going to be Isaiah Bond.
This Texas defense last year was so strong in the middle with Sweat and Murphy. Those two guys, just big-time players for the Longhorns. Can they have that kind of presence this year, especially against the SEC offensive lines, which are just going to be, by their nature, a more physical group than you saw in the Big 12?
That's a million-dollar question this year. They return a lot of experience in the secondary. They return experience at linebacker. And even their defensive end position, which has kind of been I don't want to say abandoned, but neglected recruiting wise in recent years, is back to having a lot of really great options there. But you're losing two guys who are probably going to be, our talent wise, top 50 picks. Byron Murphy is going to be a top half of the first round pick. Tavondre Sweat, if it weren't for his recent DUI, DWI, was going to be a top 50 pick. Those guys are tough to replace. They made running the ball dang near impossible for teams last year. With that said, the guys who are probably stepping in for them are a little bit different physical profile. Alfred Collins and Vernon Broughton were the backups to them, but Texas likes to rotate their defensive tackles, so they're not short on playing time and they're not short on experience. They're fifth-year seniors. But are they going to be able to hold the middle and make running between the tackles basically a non-starter like it was for most of last season? I mean, they could, but that's probably not their strength right now. They're better moving around. They're better kind of stunting. But at the same time, there are going to be some situations where they just got to line up and go. I'm not totally concerned about that. Will this level of play be a step down? Yes. Does that make it bad? No. But with Texas really trying to rotate those defensive tackles, make sure guys are fresh in the fourth quarter. You know, I said it the other day, if they're in a 65 play game, they probably prefer like a 35-30 split between their defensive tackles. The question now is are those second guys who last year were Collins and Broughton, are they going to be able to make that level of play to where teams will see them go off the field and go like, all right, time to run up the middle? The answers right now are hopefully one more in the portal, maybe two. That's what Texas is looking for, I feel like, in this portal cycle. They have Aaron Bryant, who's actually from South Haven, who's drawn some pretty positive reviews. And Tia Sevilla, a transfer who started his career at UCLA, went to Arizona, and then now is transferred to Texas. Even a true freshman, which I know is sometimes a risky proposition at this position in the conference, in Alex January, has gotten some praise. So they're it's not like they're lacking options, but again, they're looking in the portal for defensive tackles. And I think if they can find one or maybe even two, they'll feel significantly better about what's going on in the trenches this season.
We like to use the term SEC ready sometimes when we talk about teams, and that's been the focus of these last few years as Texas and Oklahoma get closer to joining the SEC. I think Texas is SEC ready. This is a team that was in the college football playoff a season ago. I previewed Oklahoma on this podcast, and I asked Eddie Radosovich about Oklahoma, and I liked his answer, but I watch Oklahoma, and I don't think they are SEC ready. So I'm going to make you cross rivalry lines here for a second. Do you think Oklahoma is SEC ready?
I think that at the skill position, undoubtedly. Jackson Arnold is going to be a quality quarterback, and I think they were not sad to see Dylan Gabriel go so they can hand the reins over to Arnold. Running back has been recruited well, and they do pretty well at receiver there. They have a very experienced secondary. They have one of the best, a guy who may be a first-team All-SEC linebacker in Danny Stutzman coming back. I think that Brent Venables and even some of the offensive guys, Joe John Finley and Seth Luttrell, are capable coaches. And I trust that Brent Venables, you know, it's tough for a Texas guy to say, but has he knows how to build a program inside a locker room, I feel like, after seeing it for so long with Dabo and with Bill Snyder and even with Bob Stoops. Here's the thing about the Sooners, and where you're probably going to see them be incredibly active. They lost not only did they lose offensive linemen, you know, to the draft, they were decimated in the portal along the offensive line. I don't think the situation's as dire on the defensive line, but I read Sooner Scoop, and that's Eddie's site. And I saw some discussion about how they may be looking to some true freshmen to maybe help out there. And like I said, that's a risky proposition. So that's tough. And in a league where you've got teams like Georgia, teams like Tennessee, heck, even Lane Kiffin, and I know that Jeff Lebby does this too. Everybody kind of talks about their passing attack and, oh, wow, look at these receivers. If you're going to give them 5 yards a carry, they'll take 5 yards a carry 60 times. And I wonder about that aspect for the Sooners. They do have one of the best offensive line coaches in the country in Bill Biedenbaugh. They have a very capable defensive staff led by Brent Venables. But they got to have the dudes. And I think unless something changes in the portal, their trench play is going to be lacking when it comes to the SEC, but I feel like they're pretty much ready almost everywhere else.
Last question might be the most difficult, but our fans here in Mississippi need to know for when they make the trip. Best barbecue in Austin?
Oh, man. There are a bunch of different spots. If you got a – man, you're putting me on the spot here.
That's the toughest question, man.
The number one spot in Texas Monthly, which is, you know, kind of an arts, leisure, you know, culture magazine.
I follow Daniel Vaughn.
It's yeah, so you know about Interstellar, and that's not too far out of town. If it is a night game or an afternoon game, actually, this may only be possible for a night game. There's a place in Lexington, about 45 minutes out of town, called Snows.
Yeah,
and you have to spend the night there, which is a little bit of a challenge. But you wake up and the 70 something, maybe 80 something year old pit master is there ripping whiskey shots with you while you're waiting on barbecue. But in town. people like Franklin's. I think that's a good place. You just have to wait in line. But I think my number one is a place called Terry Black's Barbecue.
Yeah,
they've started to branch out a little bit across the state. They're from a world-renowned barbecue family based out of Lockhart. They're Austin location. They've got one right by campus that is fantastic, and that's my number one. As far as barbecue goes,
that's the most important piece of information that we've given out here on this interview. I just want to, that's the one everybody really needs to know, is where to eat when they're in Austin. Also, I've been told there's a pro tip with Franklin that if you order $100 worth of food, you can just pick it up. You don't have to wait in line.
Correct. I think you can order ahead, but I haven't.
I've seen their menu. That wouldn't be too difficult to get $100 running on a tab there.
Hey, the price of beef has gone significantly.
It's silly. Yeah. It's silly. Joe Cook, Inside Texas. Great to have you on, man. We'll have you back on during the summer when we're doing opponent previews, and then when we get into the season, we'll have you on. Appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right, great to get my thoughts on Franklin Barbecue confirmed there. If you go and order ahead of time and order $100 worth of stuff, you don't have to wait in line. That is critical information. Just get with
But you have to get $100 worth of stuff?
Don't you think that if the three – if you, let's say me, you, and Stefan – we're going to go to a barbecue restaurant. You don't think our tab is $100?
It'd be close.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, it's not, brisket is like $38 a pound out there, man. It's pricey.
It's like gold.
It's liquid gold.
It's like a block of gold.
It is, but it's more tasty and it's easier on the teeth.
That's true.
I don't think the Texas Longhorns are going to be easy on anybody this year. They are legit. I think they're the second best team in the conference.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really intrigued to see how Oklahoma and Texas react to the league.
Mm-hmm.
They have the resources, you know. They've shown the ability to play against really good competition, whatever. But What's this transition going to be like? Are they going to come right in here and start competing at the highest level? I don't know. But this team certainly has those capabilities. There's no doubt about it. The program has had the capabilities for a long time, and now they're hoping that Steve Sarkisian is the guy that can kind of bring them back, because this has been a team that, quite honestly, State has been as successful as them in like the last decade up until Sarkisian came on.
Mm-hmm.
They really, you know, were not anything special. but he's kind of brought some resurgence to that program. They got their NIL working. They got the money flowing as usual. You know, it looks like they're on the upward trajectory. He's had every single season he's been there, they've gotten better and better. This year is going to be the big test for him. If they can come in and compete right away, it's a team that is in a program that's going to be a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah.
This team had, before last year, they had one 10-win season since 2009.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Sarkisian has done what Charlie Strong and Tom Herman could not do, and that's turned Texas into a consistent winner.
Yeah.
He looked like he's set for that for quite some time with Ewers this year and then with Manning behind him. So we'll see how that goes. Big game, and obviously it's Mississippi State. Their first ever SEC home game is against Mississippi State. I'm kind of surprised the conference didn't, like, give them a super team. Like, they didn't make the Georgia game that one or something, but regardless of that, Mississippi State, Texas in Austin on September the 28th. That's the first ever conference game for the Longhorns in the state of Texas. All right. Tomorrow's show will be more about baseball. We'll look ahead to this series with Auburn. We'll talk about the spring game. I don't know how much preview we can really do of that, but we'll talk about some things maybe we would like to see in that one. Plus, who knows what else. So, until then, for Robbie Falk, I'm Brian Haydad. Thanks for listening to Thunder and Lightning here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.